For 12/7/2011, we're all full of Dutch courage. It's Video Games Hot Dog. Welcome to episode number 32 of Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
And I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin. We call that the soft opening.
What day is it? It's 12/7?
Thursday.
11? Thursday 11th?
Didn't you just say that?
Is it Wednesday or Thursday?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of both.
What have you guys been up to? How's your week?
Some of this and some of that.
By some of this, do you mean Skyrim? And some of that, do you mean Skyrim?
Yeah. Well, actually, there was another thing. Jenny and we've started kind of looking at pen and paper role-playing games. I thought it would be kind of a fun thing if we found an RPG system that lent itself well to...
Not having a dungeon master?
Well, kind of. To having like a really basic and simple one-on-one game.
Having a real doll for a dungeon master?
Without a lot of complicated rules so that we could just keep our character sheets on our phones, and whenever we run out of other stuff to talk about in a restaurant, the one of us who is currently GMing can go, oh, hey, remember, you were getting attacked by a goblin. What are you going to do about that?
So does this have anything to do with that character sheet where I saw the skill summon pony/dolphin?
Yeah, Jenny picked summon monster 1 as one of her first level spells and decided that ponies and dolphins were the only thing she would ever want to summon.
Neither of those is a monster.
That's on the list. I don't know.
Okay. Huh.
In the list in what system?
Is Pathfinder, which I picked up on the recommendation of the Penny Arcade guys. It is basically the same. It's like an incremental upgrade to D&D version 3.5. So it's sort of like 3.75 Dungeons & Dragons.
Not 3.5.1.
No. So it seems pretty good. And
I heard there was a memory leak.
Well, there was. I did get the basic starter box, which is the greatly simplified version of the rules. So you could consider that sort of a rules leak.
Okay.
But it seems pretty good. It's a really simplified breakdown of the system, but it's all still compatible with the main core inch and a half thick rules book, so you can just play with this dumb kiddified simple rules.
And if
you need
really
more
boring
details, I mean they're as good as fighters ever were in three
Do
and
hit
a half.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And that's it. Push on
power brick. Attack feet, you know.
Bend bars.
Sure.
I always thought it was weird that in the original D&D rules, bend bars was a thing that was like on your character sheet.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You have to do that often
gate.
Enough.
Yeah,
you have to bend bars and
BBLG
lift a gate often
score.
Enough. That it's, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so
I,
we're,
I mean, I find
we're,
myself
we're looking
do that
at
every
that.
Day.
If anybody has recommendations of simplified, good one-on-one pen and paper role-playing game rule sets that I should check out.
There's that caveman.
That
caveman role-playing game that was pretty funny.
Oh yeah, that one sounded pretty funny. Where you have to, you pick a vocabulary of like a dozen words plus
yep.
your intelligence bonus,
and
those are the only words
you can
ever
say.
Use.
Yep.
Yep, that's pretty good.
I think the Dungeon Master can say other things. Mm. I forget what the equivalent of a Dungeon Master is for cavemen. I guess it was just Jesus or
yeah,
lightning.
Yeah, clouds.
Or lightning Jesus.
Burning bushes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's been pretty much it. That in Skyrim. Watch Jenny finish playing. Well, not finish because it's open world, but beat the main storyline of Saints Row the Third.
Mm-hmm.
The end. See, I will not spoil the end sequence because you're playing it now. But it was fucking hilarious. It is insane.
There were parts of that game that I did not believe. I still don't believe, even after having seen them.
all I've done is work and play Skyrim, so I don't have any stories either.
Didn't you get sick? Didn't you have a massive headache? Like those are things that
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, it's
in your
super
life?
Interesting. Yesterday I had a headache. It sucked.
Yeah. But it lasted all day long.
Sure.
You had to get the blood of six oxen before you were cured.
I did. I had to drink I was reading on Wikipedia about hangover cures.
Yeah.
And apparently the Assyrians believed that a ground up sparrow's beak mixed with myrrh would cure a hangover. And so I've been trying that.
How's that been working for
you? Didn't really work. Like, by the time I found myrrh, it was the next day, so I didn't have a hangover anymore.
Sounds like a pain in the ass to catch a sparrow with a hangover.
Well, I mean, I feel like
you get the sparrow drunk the night before and you're fine.
Right.
You go down to the sparrowry and they just have them.
Do you have to shoot it with an arrow?
Well, you just wait. You check with Jesus because he noticed where one fell.
Oh, okay.
And so then you just go there and pick it up.
So Jesus is sort of like a, you know, one of those pointer dogs.
Sure. Yeah. Jumps up and laughs at you if you miss the sparrow. What about you, Kevin?
I watched a movie or two. I watched Attack the Block.
Okay, how was that?
It was pretty good. Not amazing.
Roy was all about that
Roy
movie.
Was super excited about it. It is a good independent film. It is kind of... It is hard for, I think, an American to understand because it is...
Like Trainspotty.
But worse. Like, they are... very, very dense, and I think the slant rhyme stuff, I think it's all like...
Is everyone and everything a cunt?
No.
Okay.
No, but everybody is bruv. B-R-U-V, I guess. Bruv.
Is that like a cross between bro and gov?
I don't know. It's everybody's fam and bruv. Like...
The fratful dodger?
I don't know. But it was... I should
make a note of that.
It was like a nice twist on like a standard sort of like sci-fi thing. It was pretty. It's definitely worth seeing.
Was J-Lo in it? She's from the block.
No J-Lo. Yeah, I most of the rest of the weekend I just worked and stuff.
What other movies did you watch? Or did you watch nothing but episodes of the Gilmore Girls?
I watched a bunch of Gilmore Girls. I watched. What did I watch? Something that's older. Beautiful Girls.
Okay.
Which is it's a really good movie. It's like 90s, I think, at some point. Natalie Portman is a child in it. Super cute.
Is it like Leon the Professional?
It's different than that. I think this was after.
Does she learn to murder people?
No, she does not learn to murder people.
Presumably she already knew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Leon taught her that.
Yeah. So, not a whole lot going on. I bought a bunch of Christmas presents.
Cool. I still have to do that.
Yeah.
Amazon.com.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's .com. So, Riff, tell me about your Skyrim.
It's got dragons in it, and there's people with Scandinavian accents.
Everybody's Skyrim is like that. Tell me about your Skyrim, Riff.
I haven't actually played it in a couple of days. I started doing the Dark Brotherhood Assassin quests.
How are those in this?
I haven't got very far, so they haven't gotten complicated yet. The first three are like, here's some trash jobs that we've had sitting around for a while and never got around to doing. Why don't you go kill these three mooks?
I wish they would really turn that upside down at some point, and the first assignment that the head of the Dark Brotherhood gives you is to assassinate the head of the Dark Brotherhood. And then you become the head of the Dark Brotherhood, and your next assignment is to figure out who you want you to kill.
Is it that, or would it be who would you want to kill you?
Yeah.
Well, that's not until the next game. Mm. Apparently, they've continued. There was that article that I sent you guys the link to about the like books in Morrowind. Yeah, and how there was a big chunk of it that was like really like just sort of weirdly self-aware. And they continued some of that. Like, I guess the crazy Daedra guy that you can go and get that Wabajack staff from in Skyrim, which I haven't done yet, but I want to.
I haven't done it personally, but I watched Jenny do that quest.
He, like, confirms that some character that you've seen is actually the protagonist of, in canon at least, is the protagonist of Oblivion. Hmm. I saw a pickup truck. I was driving home, and I saw a pickup truck with a sticker, like a die-cut sticker in the back that was the Oblivion logo. It was weird. Where do you even buy that? Like a pickup truck? I guess at a car dealership?
Yeah.
Like a pickup truck area?
I think all pickup trucks come with Oblivion stickers now.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
I occasionally will see a car with like a Horde sticker on it.
Yeah.
And that always makes me pretty happy.
Do you ever see a diplomatic car with Horde flags coming out of each window?
Oh, that would be great.
A funeral procession.
Yeah.
We're going to an orc funeral.
Did I just dream this last night, or do horkers in Skyrim have three tusks?
They have three tusks.
Oh,
That's I fought my first Horker yesterday.
Yeah.
Do they steal stuff?
No.
Okay. Because that would be really funny.
They're just like dick walruses.
Yeah. They're not
sorry,
very
guys,
strong.
I can't come into work
either.
Today. I got a bad case of dick walruses. I got this shampoo I got to use for a few
comes
weeks.
Comes in a bucket.
I played a bunch of... I played a little bit of WoW.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was okay. There was a new patch with some new dungeons. I ran a couple of them, and it was okay. And then I went back and tried to run some of the old dungeons, and the one time I got into a group, it was just a group full of idiots who were also impatient and just ended up bailing, and it was super frustrating. So they added three new dungeons with the previous patch, and now those dungeons, even though they're significantly harder than the Cataclysm Five Mans, are just in the pool of random heroics. And so if you get one of those, odds are the people in your group aren't going to really be that familiar with them or be geared properly for them. Or in my case, not be full of people who are too stupid to like not repeatedly get killed by just random environmental hazards. Like, there's a road you have to go down where there are these masks that breathe fire periodically. There's plenty of space in between the masks to stand. It is just like, it is the most like simple
elementary
video game puzzle that there is, right? But this guy just could not make it. He was just resurrection hopping across all of the... Yeah, it was ridiculous. And then everybody gave up. They got so sick of him.
I mean, that could also be somebody who's on a computer that's so slow that...
This guy was the dumbest person I've ever encountered. Just across the board. Mm-hmm. Across the board.
It's possible that he was 8.
Sure, sure. But I mean, being 8 is another way of being dumb.
Sure. I'm not trying to defend him as a person. I'm just trying to give you reasons why what might have been behind what you were seeing.
He also, this led me to be happy that we've changed our ways, pretty regularly referring to everything as gay. He was like, this part of the dungeon is fucking stupid. And I was like, yep, there's definitely at least one really stupid thing in this dungeon. And the other people in my group laughed. Lol, they said. yeah, but this is gay. That was gay. WTF gay. WTF gay. Yeah, and I was like, you know what? If I sounded like that guy before, I'm glad I've turned over a new leaf. Saints Row 3. I'm playing a bunch of Saints Row 3.
Yeah.
Did you get any tanks?
Yeah, you like get tanks immediately. I honestly don't know if I like it that much. I got really angry. Like the first mission, once you're like on the ground, I don't know if you've watched it from the beginning.
The first mission
when you're actually like out in the world and able to go wherever, like bugged out somehow on me. And so it was just like, protect the helicopters, and the helicopters were just flying in circles. No idea what the fuck I'm supposed to be protecting them from or how. And then I eventually like wandered off and got killed and then started the mission over and just ran it. But there's a lot of things in that game that maybe they rely on knowledge of the previous games in the series for like the interface elements to make sense. Like, once you drive, it also seems like maybe there's some weird convenience things that they added that the reason that they weren't there before was because they didn't make any narrative sense. Like, you get in this car and you get a mission to take the car to like a pay and spray. And then once you take that car to the pay and spray, that becomes a car that exists in any garage that you own from then on. Like once you've customized it. And you also get this thing where you can like call somebody and have them deliver one of your cars. But I guess there's only one of them, because if it gets blown up, you have to pay to get it repaired before it gets brought back to you. Right. And also, I picked up the phone. Every time I click on the thing, I end up clicking on it 3 or 4 more times, because when you click on to call the deliver your vehicle thing, it just sits there for a few seconds. And then the phone rings. I mean, I guess it's simulating calling a dude on a cell phone, but I don't want that.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Like, I don't want every time I open the map, a little blue dot with a circle around it to slowly get smaller as it figures out where I am, right? Like, you don't...
That sounds like it may be port issues, because I don't remember that happening.
Oh, I was in port issues, that part of town.
Oh, okay, right.
Also, I don't exactly understand, like, what town am I in? They keep talking about Steelport. Am I in Steelport?
I think you're in Steelport. Stillwater is where the Saints are from.
I think Stillwater is the band from Almost Famous.
Right. Yep.
Stillwell?
Still something.
Weltwater.
Still suit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Steelport is where this
There are a lot of quests about urine and feces.
Yeah, there's an outfit that is just a It just makes me angry.
It's great.
You become a toilet, like a porcelain white toilet.
Okay.
Just hopping around.
Hopping around.
Yep.
No arms.
If you have a gun, it hovers nearby.
Yeah.
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 What the fuck? I mean, seriously.
I mean, that's a bonus thing that you don't... That is actually... Well, okay. The first time you see it in the game, it's explained because it's part of... It's a fucked up part of a VR mission that you're doing.
Yeah.
But you can... But it unlocks as a thing you can have anywhere after you've beaten the game.
I see.
So, I mean, there's like, you know, the guy that always talks in auto-tune, which is funny, right? And not just like... Too pure. I mean, I'm a guy that likes a fart joke, you know, but like there's the shootout where you're in rickshaws that are being pulled by like BDSM gimps,
mm-hmm.
which was like, you know, it was a little silly. Everything that I heard about this game was that like, no, it embraces the form of the video game. It's like, oh, you want everything to be awesome? Well, here's even more awesome than you were expecting. Take that.
Well, but there's like a lot of awesome, but there's also a lot of
dumb.
So you have to kind of be willing to embrace the dumb, too.
I mean, there have definitely been missions that I was like, wow, that's really cool. And like it kind of, there is this question, right? Like, if you're in a video game world, anything can happen. So why isn't just everything super sweeping and epic, right? Like, why isn't it just like a nonstop highlight reel? And I guess, you know, the pacing issues make that not a very good story.
Yeah.
If it works like that.
That digital tank that Riff mentioned last week is the tank from Combat.
Mm.
That's where the sound effects come from and stuff. Mm. It's pretty funny, but like... It just does not fit in the world at all.
You know, something that I've noticed about this that, like, my only point of comparison for this game is Vice City, mm-hmm. right? And, like, you can just be driving your car at full bore and hit the mission start spot, and then it just starts the mission, right? Like, you don't have to actually get out of the car and stand in the thing, which is kind of nice, except there was one mission that bugged out for me. It was one where... When the mission starts, it spawns a car for you that you're already in, and just somebody else is driving. But the car that I had been driving when I pulled up to start the mission spawned inside that car when it started, which just like blew all the doors off the car that I was in and made it, and like I think popped some of the tires. So the AI... The NPC that was driving the car was just like, just constantly like slaloming streetlights and stuff and just constantly crashing into people. I don't know if they just like, they weren't expecting the tires to be blown on that car because there was no way to do it. But yeah, it was a weird, weird scene. I like, you know, crashing cars into stuff.
Yeah.
And I like that you can like, pull any car into a paint spray and get nitrous on it for like $100.
Yeah, and gladiator spikes.
Sure. I like that you can buy a high-rise apartment for $100.
What was that video game where the whole game was basically crashing your car into stuff?
I was a section of like the Burnout games. Yeah.
Yeah,
I guess there's some downloadable game that is just that part of Burnout, which is all I really ever cared about. In the Burnout games. It's so much more fun than a racing game.
Yeah.
We do not have a very wide cross-section of video games addressed on this podcast because we don't give a fuck about racing games. We don't give a fuck about sports games. We don't give a fuck about modern shooters.
I mean, I feel like we should play some of those at some point.
No, we shouldn't. We should continue to be comfortable in our niche. We should never expose ourselves to anything that might fuck up our worldviews.
I don't know. You enjoyed TF2. Right? Like you had fun. I believe you
sure.
uttered those words.
I did say that I had fun. I also had fun playing Castleville.
Yeah. Okay, so those are things like we're expanding our horizon slowly.
Sure.
We'll play FIFA.
I don't even know how soccer works.
Yeah, well, you'll
I
learn.
Mean rugby. I don't even know how rugby works.
Yeah,
I should have said that first. Yeah, would have been funnier. I played some more Binding of Isaac
because
can't not do that. I finally beat it 10 times and unlocked the dead baby character. And
is that like your unborn brother or something?
No, I think it's you. It's a dead version of you. They're all you, wearing Are different they? Clothes. Yeah, the developer has confirmed that.
I see.
I played some Minecraft actually while Jenny was playing her wizard on Skyrim.
Doing anything cool?
I walked far enough in the Nether to find one of the new Nether fortresses and found a spawner box for the new Blaze enemy, and found some instructions on the YouTube channel of this guy called Etho. His YouTube channel is Etho's Lab, for instructions how to turn one of these spawning boxes into a pretty sweet Blaze farm. And it's this sort of cone filled with pistons so that the Blazes spawn and then get pushed down into the central point at the bottom of the cone, and then you hit a button that slams walls into them to suffocate them down to half a heart, and then the walls open so that you can, and then you can just one hit punch them so that their XP and drops just sort of flood into you. Although on there's a bug currently with monster hitboxes in multiplayer where you can't melee hit a monster in the legs. So, but fortunately, snowballs damage Blazes because they're fire-based creatures, so I just have a box of snowballs next to the output on this thing.
Snowballs in hell.
Yep.
That's cool. Funny. And so it's just a device for leveling up real fast?
Yeah, you level up pretty quick, and you get Blaze rods, which are important for... They're an important alchemy ingredient, and... ingredient for the device you need to do alchemy in general, and you also need the powder you can turn it into for some of the end game stuff. Like I think Ender Eyes are partly made out of that stuff, and you can also burn them, and they're more efficient than coal. So they're pretty useful items.
I decided that I was going to play Minecraft like just from the start with the goal of killing that dragon, and then I just kept messing around with it and thinking like, yeah, I just kind of don't, I don't really want to do that.
Where do you find the dragon?
In the Enderman dimension.
It's pretty, it's interesting.
Really hard. It seems like really complicated and really hard to get to.
Yeah.
Like having that realization like, oh man, if I start over, that means I have to find diamonds again.
Mm-hmm.
Like that process of like going from nothing to having some diamonds is
so awesome.
Luck based.
No, it's awesome.
There's not a really good progression. I actually played a bunch of Terraria also.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which, I heard that there was a big Terraria update, so I was like, all right, I'm gonna check that out and see how my guy is. And I'm like, all right, my guy's on my old computer. That sucks. So I started over.
And oh, wow.
That also is fucking hard. I remember being really frustrated with it when I first started playing it because there's like you spend a long time in the like low tiers of stuff that you can have and do.
That's weird because I really like, I have probably played 8 characters from nothing to sort of full diamond gear and enjoy, like, that is my favorite part. And once I have that,
it just depends.
A lot less
if you don't,
exciting.
If you get unlucky.
No, but I mean, it's not a question of finding it quickly. It's a question of staying alive and persisting until you get the diamonds. They're around.
Like
it's just a matter of finding them.
And they're spread out. If worse comes to worse and you're not finding diamonds from caving, then you can just...
start mining.
Yeah, just strip mine.
Like, you know, I guess for me, in Minecraft, going into a big cave system is just equivalent to committing suicide. Like, I just will never find my way out.
There's so many, now there are so many chests and stuff in the, in the old mine shafts that there's a lot more chance of just finding diamonds and stuff there.
Mm. I've not really messed with a lot of that.
We should, I want to start up a chain world again, but we should also do
an asshole. Sorry.
We should also do, well, I mean, it would be worth starting a new one anyway.
Oh,
because
that's true.
1.0 has changed a lot of stuff, but we should do a video games hot dog Minecraft server so it can instantly fill up with fire and dicks.
Can we do that in a way that's gonna not prevent us from having other servers? Or does it, can we only have one server at a time?
I think we buy, we just pay.
Oh, we just do it on a service.
Yeah, we just do a commercial one. Okay. I'd pay 10 or 20 bucks a month to have that. Sure.
All right, let's make that a thing for next week or two or something.
It is going to be. I'm going to be pissed the first time I build
actually,
something elaborate.
We could do that as an assignment at some point in the next few weeks.
Okay.
That'd be fun, I think.
Okay.
Because that would, we'd all be in there, we'd all be doing stuff, and it would be in conjunction with all of our listeners. So that's your pre-homework is to buy a copy of Minecraft and get familiar enough with it that you can play it comfortably if you haven't already done so. And sometime in the future, we'll do that.
Hopefully when we're all back from Christmas.
Yeah. You look like a man with a post-it note.
Yeah, I've got a post-it note. So I downloaded Amazing Breaker on my phone. And I thought
this is going to be a point of contention.
Yeah, I thought that it was going to be like a fun, happy game because you were all into it and super excited about it. And you're like,
I still like it.
It's a fun game.
Instead, every time you turned it on, it just shot a spike right into your balls.
Yeah, so it is one of the most frustrating games I've played in a long time.
Are you trying to get 100% on every level?
Yeah, well, I did get 100% on every level.
Oh.
But, like, somehow you, I believe, compared it to Angry Birds and were like, this is so much more satisfying than Angry Birds. And I
said,
was
though,
so angry with it in comparison
I said,
to Angry
though,
Birds.
I think the only reason that I think it is better than Angry Birds is because I like the way it looks.
Huh.
That I recognize that every complaint that I have about Angry Birds is manifest in this game.
Wait, I think it's not just manifest, it's like way more prevalent. Like, actually getting stuff to go exactly where you want is so much harder with this, I found.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of times that I got 99% on a fucking level, and that is not adequate to get the 3 stars, drove me fucking crazy. Like, I should have just taken screenshots of my completely blank empty field except for a fucking single pixel over and over and over again. Ah, God.
100% means 100%, man.
Yeah.
No means no.
Yeah, no, I knew you were going to take that line. It is such bullshit. It is such horseshit.
It's pretty.
It's not that pretty.
Well, you're on a bullshit old school iPhone with the zero res.
Yeah.
It's a 0x0 screen.
So, yeah. You sure that's not just a brick?
So then I played some other Flash games. I played a bit of that more Creeper World Evermore.
Yeah, the randomly generated daily Creeper World level. I've been doing that too.
I'm familiar with Creeper World at all, but I feel like that wouldn't be as satisfying.
It's not as satisfying, but it definitely scratches the Creeper World itch.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. It is a fun game, and so just having an arbitrary amount of new is fun.
And then I played, I think it was called Long Way, which was on Kongregate, was a Western themed tower defense game.
Hmm.
It was kind of nice. Their narrative conceit of having a pre-made maze was that you were up on top of a box canyon shooting down at people that were trying to steal your cattle, which was sort of the best narrative conceit that I'd seen about that in a while.
Right. A tribe of extremely well-organized Indians are trying to steal your cattle.
There were some Indians. There's some wrestlers and stuff.
Wrestlers?
Like luchadors?
Luchadors, yeah.
And then I played this game called Impasse, which is like a puzzle game. And it's kind of interesting. It's not like any other puzzle game that I've seen. It's very minimalist. Each time you use the arrow keys to move, and each time you move, you cause stuff on the board to change in a very predictable way. But the puzzles were relatively complicated. So it was definitely worth like the 45 minutes or whatever it took for me to get through them all.
To 100% every level.
Yes.
You got some serious problems, Kevin.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, that's sad. You know,
100%.
Do games have a responsibility to not
to prevent you from hurting
you?
Yourself?
Yeah. I mean, do you need to be is there a responsibility on the part of a game designer to protect you from yourself?
What about
you,
like,
you
is there a prison is there a responsibility on the part of a knife manufacturer to prevent you from cutting yourself?
Well, no, if you're the kind of person that's like, I can't fully experience this knife unless I cut my dick off with it.
Right.
if you don't start at the right end, you can only do that like a couple times.
That's true.
You were talking about, you were complaining about the way enchanting works in Minecraft.
Yeah, I was super curious about that. I haven't experienced it firsthand, but I heard a discussion about it that sounded like it was horrible, horrible bullshit.
Well, it is.
So you get, every time you drag an item into the enchantment stand, mm-hmm. it gives you three random enchantments right. up to the level that you are or whatever. Like you collect experience, which doesn't level you up, but gives right. you enchanty juice.
Right. The way it works is you've got this enchanting table, and the enchanting table, just sitting in a room on its own, will allow you to enchant an item up to, I think, level 5. So meaning that a level 5 enchantment takes 5 of your character levels, which do nothing else as payment for it. And so you open the enchanting table and you drop in your pickaxe or your sword or what have you, and it gives you 3 random things that 3 random enchantments that are labeled in untranslatable gibberish and have the number next to it that
well,
they're
is not, they're translatable but they
don't
are,
mean
but
anything.
They are gibberish, right?
Yeah,
it's,
they
it,
are
it's
gibberish.
Like the alphabet from Commander Keen yeah. applied to a random series of words
right which don't signify anything. And so all you can see is the number, which is both the cost and a rough idea of the quality. And it's not linear, but it's like the higher the number, the better the possibility of the enchantment is. And so you might get Unbreaking 2, or you might get Efficiency 1 on a level 5 enchantment, and you can also get Efficiency 1 on a level 1 enchantment. It's kind of a gambling random loot kind of mechanic. And so the more bookcases you place around the enchanting table, the higher the number can get. Until the point where the maximum you can possibly get is 33 bookcases around this table, which lets you potentially do enchantments up to 50. But the higher the level, it does it on sort of a bell curve. So if your enchanting table only goes up to 5, then the bell curve is from 1 to 5 on the ends. And if your enchanting table goes up to 50, it's from 1 to 50 on the ends. So if you're trying to get a level 50 enchantment, it takes a lot of clicks before you actually roll
one.
But
you just, like, putting an item in it, mm-hmm. it's not based on some property of the item that's consistent. Like, you have to just keep putting it in, seeing
right.
what's available, taking it out and putting it back in and
right.
seeing what's
yeah,
available.
That just seems
like a pretty...
That's rolling character stats in old school.
I mean, it does seem like something that probably they will put on a button that says try again.
Yeah, but even that
or
is
just
or
let you decide
else.
How much
I mean,
of your stuff
I mean,
you
it's,
spend.
It's,
or have it fixed. If they insist on it being random, just have mm-hmm. it like have it randomize the things that are available based on the item ID of
yeah.
based on some unique identifier of that item. So, these pants aren't good enough to sustain a level 50 enchantment. I guess I have to try a different pair of pants next time, as opposed to I have to just click 10,000 times until I get lucky.
Well, except you might not want a level 50 enchantment just because you have 50 levels to spend. You might want to enchant 50 picks.
But I thought it gave you three. I thought it gave you 3 different options to put on it, which mm-hmm. were spread across low, mid, high.
I can't verify whether they are or not, but I don't think they are. I think it's just 3 random picks huh. from that bell curve.
Well, then if you don't want any of those enchantments, then you have to use a different thing. Enchanting is an art, not a science.
Well, I mean, if you don't want a level 50 enchantment on your pick, then I mean, it still sucks because then you're just rolling to get a low number instead of rolling to get a high number.
But not rolling is what I'm saying. You shouldn't just let people at the cost of pressing a button get to pick a new number within the distribution for like the old school RPGs.
Well, I'm saying
can,
the way it is now, not necessarily
sure,
how it ought to be.
Sure,
but I'm still not entirely clear on what you want.
I want that not, I want it not to be the way that it is now. And if they insist on leaving it random, mm-hmm. then randomize it based on the particular item as opposed to based on the act of putting the item in the enchantment.
How based on that particular item?
Some sort of random seed.
Like based a on that. Seed the random number generator with the item ID of that item. So that a given, you make a copper sword, mm-hmm. and that copper sword only has this set of enchantments of it. Like, so
I don't think items have unique IDs.
They have to because you can have a, like, when you hit something with a sword, it has durability.
Right. They do have their durability. That's true.
I mean, you know, it's like a given block of cobblestone might not, but the things that don't stack definitely do. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like in an old RPG where
that sounds less satisfying though. But then if
It sounds incredibly dissatisfying to me the way it is now.
But then if I want a low-level enchantment on a diamond sword, do I then have to make diamond swords until I happen to get a diamond sword
Why
that
would
can
you
have
want
a low-level enchantment,
low enchantment on it, though?
I who knows?
You might get I one might. Anyway, given the fact that you don't even know what you're getting. Well, the fact that you don't know, like, this is what drives me crazy. The fact that even with the budget, mm-hmm. you don't know what you're getting. Why isn't it just always the max budget? If you want a lower budget, move the fucking bookcases away, right? Like,
that's what I did. Okay, I have all my bookcases on pistons, so I can tune how many bookcases are next to my enchanting table.
That's ridiculous. Right?
it doesn't seem particularly well thought out, right? Like, yeah, it doesn't. It, you know, it, I'm sure.
I think
that
that's probably true, and I'm
yeah,
sure
think
that
one,
as
I think
as they continue
kind of
to
a rush job,
yeah, but. as they keep patching it, I'm sure it'll go through changes.
Like, everybody moved away from that rolling stats model because it was like, wow, this is kind of bullshit. Because what we're doing is we're making it so when somebody wants to play this game, they just have to keep starting over until they get perfect luck, or they're going to feel like a sucker for not doing
well,
that.
Well, I think part of the design decision process for this was that he also wanted an element of random loot drops. He didn't want you to be able to, on purpose, make a sword of smiting plus three. He wanted the sort of thing the way it is in Diablo, where you kill a bunch of monsters and eventually maybe the sword, the exact sword you want.
And you can
drop.
Put multiple enchantments on a thing too. So yeah, and they all of gear in Minecraft is consumable anyway, right?
Like, what are the different kinds of enchantments?
There's some interesting. There's on tools. You get efficiency, which mines blocks faster. You get unbreaking, so sometimes a hit will not reduce the hit points of your tool. There's one called Silk Touch, which will, instead of giving you whatever that block normally would result in, it gives you the block itself.
So you can mine stone and get stone.
Or mine diamond ore and get a block of diamond ore instead of diamonds.
So those now become placeable objects. Yeah. That's awesome.
There's also one that...
Can you do that to fire?
I don't think so. There's also one that gives you, like, more drops from things that give you drops.
Okay.
And things like that. There's, for the weapon, well, just swords, because bows can't be enchanted just yet. For swords, there's... you know, sets things on fire, does more damage to bugs, does more damage to undeads, knockback, things like that. For armor, there's explosion resistance and fire resistance, and I think you can get a water breathing on a helmet, things like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's some good stuff.
And then there's, like, potions of, like, fire resistance where you can just swim around in lava and stuff.
For a few minutes.
Pretty cool.
I haven't really played with the alchemy yet, but I've read about it, and there's some interesting details in the way it works, because there'll be, like, the recipe that'll give you the fire breathing potion, and then you have the choice of adding then ingredient A to it, which reduces the duration but makes the potion better, or ingredient B, which increases the duration but makes the potion worse, and things like that. It's pretty cool.
Minecraft.
Yep.
Anything else?
No.
That's about it.
What's in the news, Kevin?
The most interesting thing that happened this past week was the unreleasing of Glitch.
Is that literally the most interesting thing that happened in the last week?
I think so.
Yeah, probably.
Like, no Baseball Hall of Fame news?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's weird. They just decided it wasn't fun enough.
Which I think is pretty admirable.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I don't think I've ever heard of anybody taking a game back to beta and closing the doors again while they worked on it more.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. I'm curious as to what that sounded like internally.
Yep. Yeah.
It seems like they're wanting to add a bunch more customization options and stuff, like have you do more like building of your house instead of just buying a house and having. I was pretty disappointed when I bought a house in Glitch and it was like, oh, like a shelf for me to put stuff on, but like turns out that shelf is only for some certain kind of trophy items or whatever. Oh, yeah. And I was like, well, but I wanted just like a broccoli shelf, you know.
Yeah.
You can come look at my sweet dragon
bone shelf.
My sweet broccoli pattern.
Does it give you a box to put inventory items into?
You get like a crate, you get like an armoire or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it varies from house to house. I picked the one that was all like cemetery themed.
Maybe they're going to put in skeletons for you.
Ooh, maybe they are.
You still have to hug them, though.
It does seem to be a guiding principle that they don't really want you. They don't want a, like, fighting-based game.
Which, you know.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of room in the world.
I feel like.
For failures.
I probably would have avoided putting creatures in the world that you wanted resources from, though, if I was going to do that. Right?
Like, well, but I mean, it's like you jack off a pig to get bacon or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
It's not.
But that's the thing. Like, it just seems lame. Like, that, like, just. It's kind of funny, but it's also kind of like, why? Why is it like this? You know, at least with Farmville, like, you're growing crops and then harvesting them. Like, that makes sense.
I don't know. You didn't feel like you were exploiting that purple crystal sheep?
No, I did not.
I don't think I ever actually interacted with that thing. It was just standing there.
You can harvest it for coins every couple of days.
You can immediately sell it instead of using it.
That's true. I think that's what it was for, too. Yeah. It's just to be sold, basically.
I don't know. I hope that they're putting in stuff to do with, ultimately, with the crafting instead of just crafting so you can get more crafting.
That, or more of the, like, sort of puzzly stuff like that. Yeah. One space that I happened to wander into.
Yeah.
Which seemed really neat, but seemed so isolated that it wasn't really part of the core game.
Yeah, there was, like, that one thing during the tutorial where you get shrunk and you go into, like, a place where you have to find a dust bunny or whatever, and then nothing like that ever happened again.
Yeah.
You're looking at me quizzically, Kevin.
I'm trying to remember if I did that. I mean, if I guess if
you're
it was
on
part
a table,
tutorial.
I think there's a cat,
huh?
That's asleep. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I need that stuff to exist for any other reason than its own sake. But I also like hadn't been playing. You know, I was all right, that's enough of that. Which would have happened no matter what the game had been about. Right? I probably would have stayed longer if there had been new skeletons to kill every day. But
yeah, I'm curious what it is about games that get you coming back. You know, like, that didn't capture me. I was definitely interested in Castleville more thematically, but
I mean, I played Echo Bazaar a good long time in spite of its bullshit energy regeneration mechanic, just because the world was so interesting and the stories were cool.
It does suck, though, that, like, it's so tied into Twitter, you know, like, it's just you can get a bunch of, like, oh, you know, 5 times a day you can get your energy refilled if you post some random snippet of Echo Bazaar's text onto Twitter. Mm-hmm. It was like, I made a Twitter account just for that, you know, which then Twitter
isn't being seen by anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super weird.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked, thematically, I really liked what was going on in Echo Bazaar, but I just, like, it's like that Triple Town thing. Like, why the fuck can I not just have this as a non-social game?
Yeah.
Swords and Sorcery was interesting in that they gave you hundreds of hooks into Twitter, but it didn't really matter if you used them or not.
Although, I mean, it was very unclear about that.
Yeah.
Because it kept talking like this was important. And so I kept, well, okay, I guess this is a funny bit of dialogue. I'll post that. And then I immediately felt bad because this is spoilers.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah. You know, I feel like everybody's trying to figure out how to be the next cool thing on the next social media app, you know?
Yeah.
So, What else is going on? Speaking of social media apps, Zynga's doing an IPO. They're looking to raise $1 billion.
They're looking to fire all of the people that have any stock options,
I guess,
before their stock actually turns out to be
worth anything. I hadn't heard about that news story that you were talking about.
I think it was a bunch of underperforming executives, and they were just like, hey, so you can either give us back all your stock options, or you're fired, and all your stock options are meaningless because they haven't vested yet.
Huh.
Yeah.
Do you not get to keep options if you're fired?
No.
Really?
Yeah. You don't get to keep them if you quit either. I mean, stock options that take time to vest is a way of the company.
Do you have to continue working there for them to vest?
Stock options at a company that hasn't IPO'd are valueless until.
Right. Until but you can have options that vest before there's an IPO, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that, I mean, there is some contention.
I prefer my options to cummerbund.
There's some theory out there that Zynga is going to lose a bunch of people as soon as they go IPO because they're anybody that wants to just cash out and do something else with their life will leave.
Well, I don't know. I got to imagine that most of the people that work for Zynga just like really believe in what they're doing. You know, like they're not what you're suggesting that company might have people working at it that are like just sort of crass and greed driven.
No, not at all.
No.
So
if anything, their sin is lust.
So there's a...
I saw the way that purple crystal sheep was looking at me.
Instead of just the humble indie bundle, there's apparently a new indie game bundle out there called Indie Gala. There's a bunch of games in it, like five or six. I wrote down a couple. In Momentum, which I've never heard of, or Hacker Evolution.
So you wrote down the ones you've never heard of, thinking those were probably the highlights.
I put the first ones on the list in there because I assumed that those would be the most interesting to people who had any idea what they were. I have not heard of any of the games in there at all.
This is a great news story.
And it's not cross-platform, so yeah, I don't
know. So Casey Wiederman hates it?
Yeah.
So all the Linux people are all grumpy.
Yeah.
My FOSS hurts.
There was a really cool article in Scientific American about StarCraft II.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's several groups of scientists that are using...
that are playing StarCraft II instead of working.
That are using StarCraft II data because Blizzard keeps really good logs of stuff, or you can like save your save game logs or whatever. The scientists are taking those logs and using them to sort of reconstruct games and try to figure out ways that they can figure out what makes good players good and bad players bad, and like if they can understand sort of the learning curves and the ability to multitask and stuff like that seems to be really strong in the players who are winning the games.
When we were watching those professional games and them talking about how serious players, even when they're not doing anything, will just constantly be clicking the ground so that their actions per minute metrics don't fall.
But it wasn't just them. It's not that they want to be in the right rhythm for when stuff happens, right? So they are... You know, they're doing what they're doing, but they want to be ready to be reactive and stuff. So they want to be like, I'm going to click, 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 click. Oh, crap, I'm being attacked. And so then they can very quickly click
on
what
they're repeatedly clicking on the ground so that they don't forget where their mouse is. When somebody's attacking, they're like,
you know,
what the fuck? What is this flat thing in front of me with all the letters on it?
Maybe it turns out that playing a game at that level is less about like...
Less abstract, about thinking and more about feeling.
Less about like real-time problem solving and more about sort of playing a musical instrument, right?
So they're clicking to keep the beat.
Yeah, they're keeping a tempo, and what they're waiting for is a particular melody that they then need to do counterpoint to or something.
It's racist for you to suggest that anything that an Asian is good at is a cello, Kevin.
Sure. I don't know. I mean, I'm just curious.
My impression was that they did that so that their actions per minute number would be higher because that's one of the ways in which a good player is measured is, oh, it's so many actions per minute. You know, so it's like, I'm just going to, if I don't have anything to do, I'm just going to march this one footman back and forth. You know, the footman from StarCraft II.
Yeah. The bugle player.
Yeah. The Protoss. Nobody plays Protoss.
Yeah, I didn't see any Protoss matches.
Yeah, which sucks because Protoss are the coolest.
They're definitely the most interesting.
They're space elves.
Oh, they're the Eldar.
Yeah. They have that thing that shoots a coiled up piece of wire inside you and then lets go of it, so it's like you swallowed a slinky.
Hmm. So then you go downstairs really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Boy, like, I'll be there in a second, guys.
And then there's a study by the Swiss government about the effects of downloading pirated music and software and stuff like that, and they found that it actually increases the amount of money that people spend on music and stuff like that.
The problem with that methodology, my understanding of that is what they saw was that the people who pirate the most games also spend the most money on games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's actually a conclusion. Like, I think that the conclusion to draw there is that, like, people who play a lot of games play a lot of games.
Yeah, but you could play all the games for free, or you could play games and also spend a bunch of money on games, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't know the specifics of the study. I did not read the study.
I mean, I feel like you could also conclude that buying a lot of games
causes you to
become a pirate. Right, right.
Because you don't know which direction the causality is going.
Well, yeah, nobody.
But maybe they.
Nobody knows what direction anything goes. Even like a bus. Like, that's why the Heisenberg bus is like, I don't even know whether I should get on this bus or not.
Well, yeah, but if you know, like, if you know where here, it is,
yeah.
Yeah. You have no idea how fast it's moving. Like,
jokes for nerds.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. I mean, because I don't, like.
But, okay.
This keeps coming up. Like,
the upshot of this is that they did not change their law, because right now there is no law against downloading copyrighted material in Switzerland or whatever.
Right, but I mean, what that's going to do is it's just going to make it so, like, no major publisher is willing to sell anything there, you know? Like, it's, like, I don't really feel particularly strongly one way or another. Like, I stopped pirating games when I started making video games professionally. I stopped pirating all media when I started making a living through creative work, right? And I'm not gonna, like, stand on a soapbox and say that everybody should do this, but I am just not gonna do it anymore because I don't feel right about it. Because I know no matter how fucked up the system is, like, no matter how great the extent is that when I spend $50 on a video game, so little of this money goes to the people that actually made the video game that it's you know, I'm not actually hurting them by stealing it. I'm only hurting Sony, and Sony has enough money. EA has enough money. Activision has enough money, and they're all assholes anyway. Look at this thing Bobby Kotick said about video games. I don't know. I don't think that justifies getting something for nothing.
Sure.
You know, because at some point, giving money to Sony does give money to the developers that Sony will hire in the future to make video games, because video games are a way of earning money, right? I mean, so even if it's not like you're paying the people that made this thing that you like, you are at least making it so
that
the industry exists,
sure,
so that there are jobs for the people who are doing this stuff. And, like, you know, everything is a mess. Everything is a mess, and every company that you give money to is doing irresponsible bullshit with it, and, like, you know, let's go eat at Chick-fil-A so that we can fund gay murder organizations or whatever. Let's get a Domino's pizza and bomb some abortion clinics. Like, every decision that you make about what to do with your money is fraught with a bunch of invisible ethical information, right? So, yeah. I forget where I was going with this.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't even know. Every justification that I have ever seen for software piracy just doesn't ring true enough to me to overcome the, yeah, but you're also just playing a video game and not paying for it, and that's better to you than paying for it and playing it. You know, there
what
are a lot
of
people.
What if you fancy yourself a real pirate and the internet the open sea?
Sure. I mean, that's great. You know, but I mean, I feel like they were mostly concerned with getting out and stealing more stuff, and they almost always got killed before they actually got to do anything with their treasure, right? So it's okay for you to steal games, not play them, and then get killed by a cannon. That's if you want to do that,
all right,
then that's entirely okay. You know, And it's like, I'm as much of a hypocrite as anybody. Like, if I want to play some Super Nintendo game, I'm probably not going to pay $75 for it on...
For the cartridge.
On eBay to get the cartridge. I'm going to download a ROM, and I'm going to play it for 5 minutes and then put it away. And I'm going to say, well, I didn't hurt anybody, so I feel ethically okay about that. But, like, what I'm not going to do is say, all right, well, EA is doing some copy protection thing that I dislike. All right, well, that's it. I'm stealing it then. The only right, the only possible ethical move is to steal it from these assholes, because two wrongs make a right.
Yeah, it is a little annoying to me that people, instead of being like, these people made a decision I don't like, I'm just not going to play their game, which I think is a totally valid way of saying,
right,
you know, what you're doing sucks. Instead, they're like, I'm still going to play your game. I'm just not going to pay you for it, because I feel like somehow that...
But it's the perfect solution. You still get to reap the benefits of their efforts, but, you know, you still get to, like, yeah, look at me. I'm sticking it to the man. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's a touchy subject, right? And nobody... Like, I also don't buy used games. And I don't resell games, and I feel pretty strongly about not buying used games. Mm-hmm. But
that's a little less
sure,
clear
for
me.
It's different, it's down the same road. But, like, the thing is, you can't say this on the internet without a bunch of fucking dudes jumping down your throat. And it's like, well, okay. I mean, I'm not, you know, I should stop saying this in public where it's going to seem like I'm advocating that everybody behave this way. But, like, yeah, I just don't know. It's just a weird shakeup, right? Like, it's a weird time for media in general, especially for extremely expensive media like movies or video games.
Yeah,
right?
Something that they found was that small and independent artists saw a significant increase in sales when their stuff was pirated, basically.
Because of word of mouth.
Yeah, because it basically provided them additional exposure to people who were willing to pay for it. I don't know that they didn't say, but I assume that the flip side was true, where major labels probably lost money.
I mean, I think that's hard to measure, and it's also for an indie shop that has a guy as the face of it, it is trivial to figure out whether it's wrong to steal it or not. Ask the guy. If he says it's okay to steal it, then it's okay to steal it and you're not doing anything wrong. If he says no, please buy it if you want to play it, then it's fucking wrong to steal it from the guy.
You know, I like Jonathan Colton's approach, right? He's like, you know, you can probably find a lot of this on the internet. If you like it and want to come back and give me some money, then here's a box to give me some money, you know?
Sure.
And he's very realistic about it.
He says that, so it's okay. You know, MC Frontalot used to be really active in, like, trying to get unofficial versions of his stuff taken down off of YouTube or whatever, and then sort of came to the realization that it was actually better for him. But, like, if you don't want people to pirate your shit, you can tell them that, and then if they do it, they're assholes. Like, and that's just kind of how being an asshole works, right? Like,
what's interesting is that I feel like there was a distinct backlash against, you know, Metallica for saying that they didn't want people to copy their shit, right? And, like, the popular sentiment was that Metallica was assholes, right? Like, I don't know, like...
I mean, I think they were so everybody was like, no, Metallica's hypocrites. Metallica are hypocrites because they never would have gotten off the ground if it hadn't been for illegal mixtape trading, right?
They were on a major label, though. Like,
well, not in the beginning.
Oh, before they got picked up.
I guess that is also an extremely disingenuous argument, right? Like saying that Napster was the same as recording something off of the radio on
making
a cassette
a
and then making a copy of it for your friend is just horseshit, right? Because one guy can't effortlessly make a billion mixtapes, and one guy can effortlessly distribute a digital file to a billion people.
Right.
So, it was okay because it was kept on the down low to the point where it wasn't really a threat. Like, they could have gone after it, and they would have if it had made any sense for them to do it, but it didn't. It wasn't actually hurting them. The reason that they're going after this is because it is actually hurting them, at least in their estimation. And, you know, I don't know. We're lucky in that we have a product that cannot be stolen, right? Like, we are operating a service rather than a product, and we have done very well as a result of that.
Somebody else could somehow actually steal the source code and run the game on a private server.
Yeah, they might, sure. But it would be too much trouble. It would be too much trouble, and it's not going to happen. You know, and
we're too small a target.
We would probably work to shut it down, and we would probably succeed. But like, the new thing that we're making is just a standalone game, and it's like, I don't think it is possible for us to make any money with it. Like, it
depends on
there is so much stuff available for free that I don't think we can get away with selling it. And
sure, but we could just ask people to give us money.
Sure,
and I think that would bring in some money.
Yeah, no.
You know,
which is great, and that is a model that nobody has to break the law.
Yep.
And everybody gets what they want because we're just playing a different game than the larger industry, right? But we're also producing different stuff than the larger industry.
Yeah.
And so if you want our kind of stuff, play our game. If you want their kind of stuff, you have to play their game.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it is.
That sort of unintended double entendre.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to play our game, play our game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't copy that floppy, kids. Assignment, Metroid 2.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
Yep.
I only played about 10 minutes.
What?
Sorry. Now I'm the pariah.
Are you going to be fired from this podcast?
Yeah. Well, no, next time. I played it some. Here is why I didn't play it anymore. I do not do any portable gaming near a computer.
And you only play it when you are not near a computer?
Well, yes. I never sit in front of my computer and play my Game Boy. I'm always either sitting outside smoking and playing my Game Boy, or I'm lying in bed playing my Game Boy, or I'm on the toilet playing my Game Boy. So,
what if you lie on your toilet outside?
I wasn't gonna
smoke.
If you're on a toilet, you can't lie. Brian Wilson understood that, and that's why he insisted that all of his meetings be in the giant Beach Boys co-op bathroom.
Okay.
My initial impression when I saw you playing Metroid 2 on the screen was like, whoa, your dude is big on that screen. Yeah. Ended up being the just sort of like fatal issue with the game.
What?
Not being able to see the floor and the ceiling at the same time constantly leads me to believe that I am missing passageways. And I was just flat out unwilling to play the game.
In a lot of cases, you are.
I know. And I was flat out unwilling to play the game without a map. And so I played for like 10 minutes and I was like, all right, so, man, I got bombs. I killed one of those things, like a Metroid thing that was in a shell, and that seemed like it was important. I don't want to play this anymore until I can look at a map. And then I looked at a map, and I was like, wow. I just had zero sense of what the space that I was moving around in was shaped like. I'm not going to play this without a map. And then I couldn't find a map that I could print out that was legible.
The maps, yeah, I found a really good map, and it was extremely dense. Very, very, a lot of information.
And you just had it on the screen while you were playing. Yeah. See, and I would do that on a giant monitor, but I couldn't find anything that I could actually print out and take with me. Where I did learn a trick, though. If you do, if you hold select when you start a Game Boy game on Virtual Console on the 3DS, it does it at native resolution in a frame that looks like the original Game Boy.
Nice.
And if you turn the 3D on, it syncs the screen in.
Nice.
Like the original Game Boy. Yeah, that was a pretty cool.
That's great.
But I don't have anything to say about this game except that the screen is way too small for the kind of game that it is. You just cannot see enough of the world.
I played it at 4X.
No, I just mean...
I know, but I played it at 4X and it I don't know. It didn't seem that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, also, all the environments are identical, and so it's just
not once you get later in the game.
Really? Are there different tile sets that you can?
Yeah.
It's not nearly as distinctive as the different places in Metroid, right? There, like, I feel like that was a really good thing
I think
about
Metroid. In Metroid, there were probably four or five different tile sets, and I think there are four or five in.
No, just, Metroid also had the advantage of color.
This game is probably three times larger than the original Metroid, I'm guessing.
Really?
Yeah. It was the map is vast.
It looked about the same.
Mm-mm. Maybe only twice, but it's definitely larger.
Maybe only one times as big. now that you really
no, I'm pretty sure it's at least twice as big.
Okay.
There's just a lot going on. There are a ton of secrets, which was great.
It was pretty sweet. It was very nostalgic.
What kind of secrets?
So, I mean, a lot of them are just like picking up power-ups. You know, a lot of them are like extra missiles, stuff like that. There are a couple of not sequence breaking, but there's a couple of secret passages between areas to help you avoid fighting stuff, which is nice.
I remember I found the high jump boots because I was wandering around in this, I was like leaving this room and I was like, saw this one section of otherwise unremarkable looking wall and went, I kind of remember that there's something here, bombed it, and there totally was something there, and that was where the high jump boots were. And I remember thinking, damn, there is no clue that that's there. I wonder how long it's going to take Kevin and Zach to find that.
I think I had already started using a map by the point I got to the high jump boots. Hmm. I spent the first hour and a half shooting every wall looking for secret passages, which I found a bunch of secret passages, and so like it just kept reinforcing my like desire to check every surface.
Seriously, what is in them?
Sometimes it just connects to areas that you can get to otherwise, but it's just fit quicker. Like sometimes there is a secret passage to nothing. It just is a dead end, and there's nothing in there.
Sometimes there's a shortcut to mushrooms.
But yeah, like the ones that you would find more regularly would just have like an extra missile container, so it's actually five more missiles. Hmm. Sometimes the hidden stuff is like a power recharge or a missile recharge or something. And a lot of the power-ups are hidden, and you don't have to have all of them to beat the game by any means. I think you can probably beat the game with just spider mode or whatever.
Spider balls,
and ice beam. I don't know if you need anything else. You probably need bombs.
What upgrades do they introduce that aren't in the regular Metroid that exist in this
spider
one?
Spring ball.
What does spider ball do? It just lets you
stick
to the wall. Yes. Okay, and walls spring and ball ceilings. Lets you jump while you're in a ball.
Yep. And then there's space jump, which is
like a tricky wall jump in midair.
Yeah. Well, it's basically screw attack, but doesn't kill things.
Well, screw attack didn't just get to keep flying through the air, did you?
Oh, didn't you?
No. I don't think so. Screw
attack was just when you were spinning, you were also a bullet.
Space jump was allowing you to continually jump, and like it's effectively flight if you can do it right. It's just super hard to time correctly, and I never figured it out, and I got really frustrated.
You kind of have to, you jump again, like
But then you have to hold the button down?
Yeah. Because like in normal jumping, you release the button faster to do a small jump.
That just got super frustrating. And then occasionally, if you were trying to do that, you would pop out into just standing mode. Mm-hmm. And then
if you got the timing wrong,
you'd fall down to the bottom of whatever shaft you're trying to fly up.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
That was the one part in the game that I got super frustrated.
Well, you were playing it on a computer, so at least you had save states.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that was very nice. There were save points, which would have made it reasonable otherwise. They introduced energy refills and missile refills.
Yeah. So yeah, instead of
having to like just kill a bunch of stuff, super repetitively.
I did get like to the last like three or so Omega Metroids, there's like no refills.
That's definitely a tricky section.
I had to find like the room with like the one rhinoceros looking thing and the one hermit crab looking thing.
You kill them.
So what's the overall goal of the game? Are you trying to defeat Mother Brain, or are you just trying to kill all the Metroids?
You're trying to kill all the Metroids.
This is the Metroids' home planet.
Okay.
So you are trying to just like eradicate the whole species.
So that's how you win, is by killing all of the Metroids?
Kinda.
So you could win by killing everything and then going back to the start and killing that first Alpha Metroid?
No, there's... That's not how... So the game is gated by these pools of lava. And you can't proceed until you... Like, there will be a section of the map that has like six Metroids. You can kill them in any order, but you can't proceed past that lava until those six Metroids are killed. Then there's like an earthquake and it lowers that lava to the next area.
Okay.
And so that basically guarantees your progression through the game. There's no obvious sequence breaking that I'm aware of. The very last section of lava you can swim through, but if you do that, before the earthquake, there's a barrier there that prevents you from getting past it. Mm. So, and that goes away with the earthquake.
So what did this game add to the formula?
I don't know. It was just really satisfying. The level design was much more linear, but still felt like you still were like exploring stuff, but it was in like much more manageable sections.
Yeah, you're exploring in a lot more of a like there's a lot of flying to your exploration too. You're having to find, you're having to climb up the walls and along ceilings and stuff.
Very dimensional.
Yeah, and they're like large caverns that are way, way bigger than a single screen that you have to fly around to find stuff. And
it was just really satisfying. Like I liked this. I think I like this more than Metroid 1. And Metroid 1 is one of my favorite games. So this is like, that's pretty high praise from me. I think it was just really well designed. The power-ups were all really satisfying.
Yeah.
And there were more of them.
The ability to crouch and shoot.
Yeah.
Was really nice.
Just a bunch of like really small touches. I mean, it was fundamentally the same Metroid game, but just a lot of improvements. Level design, character progression.
The sprite looks way better.
They had to do that because it was black and white. They didn't have any kind of color to fall back on.
The running animation in the original Metroid was always pretty goofy.
Huh.
I felt. You look kind of like a clown.
The music was good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't play it, guys. I'm sorry to let you down.
Yeah, you should consider playing it through. It's, 3 hours-ish, 4 hours-ish.
Yeah.
Get a map.
I need to, I can dig out that issue of Nintendo Power. I keep threatening to do that about every game, but then I keep not doing it.
Yeah.
I think I'm afraid that I'm going to open my box of Nintendo Powers and it's just going to be like a pile of dust.
I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah. And what's the next assignment, Kevin?
So a game that was released yesterday or today, if you're listening to the game, to the podcast before it's released, Trine 2.
Hmm. We did Trine 1 as an assignment. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I am dubious. I didn't enjoy trying as much as you guys did.
Really?
But I'll try it out.
So there is also online co-op. So I have no idea what that means, but we should probably give that a try.
No.
We're all Steam buddies. Buddies?
Yeah. So let's give that
a try. I wonder if it's different. It's got to be different levels, right? Because trying with two people would have just been like, a lot of the puzzles would have been trivial if you could like two wizards summoning twice as many platforms or whatever.
Here's another thing. If you are doing the Master Theorem at all, you should log into it. There's a new seal this week that requires 10 people to participate in activity. And so you should either come onto our forums and find out everybody's Master Theorem name or just log into the game and figure it out and invite all of us and we'll all play a couple of games of this so we can all get the seal.
Okay. Is it something fun?
It's basically Mafia.
Huh. Okay.
Or Werewolf, I guess, depending on where you...
Mafia Wars.
Where you played the game, yeah.
Mafia versus Werewolf.
There's some aliens, there's some regular people, and you're supposed to figure out who's who. And whoever's surviving on the winning faction gets the seal. So it's almost guaranteed that you have to play it multiple times.
Playing over and over again. Yeah. Huh.
Yep. And you couldn't, like, there was a 3D tic-tac-toe that was like a two-player seal. With that one, you could just play against yourself. Be guaranteed to get the seal.
I don't even know if I would be able to beat myself at 3D tic-tac-toe.
I think you would have been able to.
So, yeah. All right, Trine 2.
Trine 2
by Frozen Bytes. You guys ready for some video games, Mailsman?
Sure.
Timothy Swan writes, "Hey, Timothy Swan, how's it going? You appear to be fascinated with text-based adventures. Have you read any of the MS Paint adventures, which build their humor off these and other also RPGs?
Yes,
what do you
indeed.
Think about comic-y gamer humor in general? When I'm not being British on overthinking it, I'm being a webcomic correspondent on another podcast, and I was interested in your thoughts, given I haven't played many text-based adventures myself." You know, I suddenly feel like I've read this on the show before.
I don't remember it.
Good. Then maybe that's just my imagination. I spend so much time reading these things, and then when it comes time to pick emails to read on the show, not remembering if I've read them on the show or just read them so many times.
Why don't you refile them as you...
I think I do.
Okay.
But then I'm like, what if I made a mistake? I don't want to feel foolish. I never really got into MS Paint Adventures.
I like it. I like it a lot.
I did enjoy it in book form.
Mm-hmm.
I think, is all of Problem Sleuth available as a book now?
Not quite. Well, they just released book 3 of Problem Sleuth. I don't think that finishes the series. I think there's going to be at least one more.
Aren't there some things that don't translate well to physical book form?
Well, not as much in Problem Sleuth. He didn't do a lot of elaborate animations or flash movies in Problem
and
Sleuth.
And when there were animations, he described the margin notes in the book were like my favorite part of the book.
But he has also released the first book of Homestuck, and that one I feel is going to be a lot more problematic because he did some really elaborate flash movies and the music he used was a big part of it. So I have no idea what he's going to do when he gets to those parts.
No, I mean, he's
going to
make a bunch of money by selling those books, you know, and that's
prolific as fuck. Really.
I think you should do Homestuck as an iPad app actually instead of just books, but that's probably just me.
Yeah, gamer comics are really hit and miss.
Hit and miss, yeah.
The only thing that I read that I feel like is consistently good is Penny Arcade. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you know, even that, a lot of the time, it's like, oh, they're talking about some mainstream game that I have no idea what the fuck. But, you know, more often than not, I get it.
And generally, he explains it well enough in the news.
Yeah, if you read the news post, then you're more or less, you know... Penny Arcade is interesting because you're reading it, you stay more or less well informed about whatever is going on in games that people are talking about on the internet.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, if you like read Penny Arcade and watch Zero Punctuation, that's pretty much all you need to know.
I don't know that Zero Punctuation is really educational about what's going on. I mean, like, he's talking about stuff that's so old in general. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's
definitely awesome.
I love it and recommend it wholeheartedly, but other video game... You know, Yahtzee wrote that blog post that was like, here is Penny Arcade's take on, like, Puzzle Quest, and then here is this other, it was like Control-Alt-Delete, maybe, or something. Some other big video game company was like, look, they did the same joke, only Penny Arcade did it in a way that was funny, and this other comic was just kind of shitty, and that's kind of how, like, there aren't any other, like, gaming-identified comics that I... have enjoyed.
Yeah, I read a ton of webcomics, but I think Penny Arcade might be the only strictly gaming oriented one that I read.
I mean, is PvP gaming oriented?
I don't read PvP anymore. There's Order of the Stick.
I hate
that's
Order of the
Stick. That's D&D oriented.
Yeah, that's
right?
D&D oriented. So I don't know.
I think that's more boring wall of text with no joke oriented.
Is Control Delete gaming oriented?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think VG Cats.
Yeah. I haven't read that one in a long time.
Like, I don't... Like, XKCD is the only one that I read sort of religiously, so...
Every once in a while, there's a thing about a game on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what you gotta read is three-word phrase.
Oh, that's a pretty good one.
It's pretty variable.
No, it's
not. I read all of...
There's one where a guy is chained up in a dungeon.
Dr. Cat.
And then he grows a beard, and then he turns into a skeleton, and then the skeleton grows a beard, and then he turns into a pile of dust, and then the pile of dust grows a beard. That's all you need to know about three-word phrase. It's a comic with a skeleton in it. So I like it. Alexander P. Douche, I don't think this is his real name, writes, what are your thoughts on video games as art? Because of my philosophical inclinations, it's hard to state my full opinions on art without sounding like a pretentious douche. But suffice it to say that Braid is one of the few mainstream games I consider art because it outputs all the advantages video games have as a medium to good use for artsy purpose. Thanks, and keep having an awesome podcast. It is weird that Braid always... Braid always comes up when games as art is broached as a subject. And,
I mean,
you know, it's pretty good.
The most artistic statement game that I can think of is Don't Look Back.
Yeah.
Which just blew my mind the first time I played it.
I mean, Binding of Isaac.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you say that?
Because I feel bad for that kid.
Huh.
It is an imaginary kid, and like, you know, did you listen to that podcast? I don't know. I don't remember if I linked to it for Video Games Hot Dog listeners or not. But there's like that Roguelike Radio where he was interviewed on there, and like, The Binding of Isaac was just that guy's response to growing up in a religious household. You know, I mean, it just takes all of this iconography and it puts it in this just sort of like desperate, grotesque framework. And it does it in a way that it, like, unfolds differently every time, and it's tense, and it's scary, and, like, the enemies that you're killing, you're sort of horrified at what you're doing a lot of the time.
Oh,
and
yeah. I always feel bad blowing up the giant,
the like hydrocephalic fly balloon guys.
Yeah.
The ones that like make that sound like a baby coughing, like I just always feel like, oh God, if I had kids, that would be like my least favorite sound, is like the sound of a
baby
drowning in its own snot. Yeah. I don't know. Like it, in addition to just being a really awesome game, that game just sort of, maybe not so much anymore because this is worn off a little bit in the in the dozens of hours that I've spent playing it. But like that game engages me on an emotional level that makes it impossible for me to not acknowledge that it is art.
Star Control 2, like, it's weird. It's hard to think of it as a piece of art because it is extremely video gamey. But like there are certain elements of it that I think have influenced and will influence like how I think about the world and video games and stuff in general. Like it's just the narratives in there were so strong. The characterizations were so strong. The ideas were so strong that like all of it just hung together so well. You know, it is so hard to talk about art without sounding like a pretentious douche.
And I mean, like, I think that it, you know, if video games qualify as art, it's not going to be the, like, capital A, I'm going to make some art game designer guy that does it, right? Like, it's just, like, you know, it's a medium, and anything that you can create in a medium that engages people on an emotional level, like, allows you to manipulate someone's emotions to entertain or to inform them, I think counts.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, I think that there's a, like, there's people get hung up on.
Do you think entertain is actually part of that?
Entertain or.
Well, but do you think you think entertain is a part of that? Like, so TV shows that were meant to entertain but had no artistry to them.
I don't know that.
That's still art?
So to me, trying to create an artifact, which, you know, has the word art in it. An artifact that is designed to
fart.
Create. Well, I mean, it's not, like, I haven't shown you my best farts, but
you don't fart every day.
Well, that would just cheapen it.
But when you do, you fart.
So I feel like there is a certain mindset that will say, "All right, well, something that disturbs me is more. I'm more apt to say that that is art than something that brings me joy." But I think that like. Creating an artifact that is designed to engender joy in a person who experiences it is art. I mean, that one of the purposes of art is to lift the spirit, right? And so you lift the spirit by like, wow, that was a fucking awesome spaceship fight, right? I mean,
I don't have a bunch of like hardened fast.
You don't have a lot of hardened farts.
I don't have a lot of hardened.
I don't have a hardened fart in this weird race.
I don't have a whole lot of hard and fast definitions in my mind for what art is.
Yeah, that's what I always feel like the problem is.
Right? I mean, that's...
Do you feel like it's pornography? Do you feel like you know it when you see it? Like, is that a real thing?
Well, I mean, I feel like you define it when you know it, right? I mean, like the way that you determine whether or not something is art is like whether you feel like it's art or not, right? Like, it's not an objective
thing. So art is...
You don't get to decide...
He who smelt it dealt it.
Right. It is necessarily subjective. The definition of art is necessarily subjective, which is, I think, why it's really fun to argue about in internet forums with Roger Ebert.
Yeah, for given definitions of fun.
I don't know. I think it's fun. People enjoy it. People get some sick, perverse pleasure out of arguing on the internet, or they wouldn't do it. I mean, nobody's...
So is the internet art because it brings people...
Yeah, it evokes an emotion. Like... You know, I have a hard time saying that a really effective troll is not an artist. Like, he is evoking, he is, by way of expression in a medium, an intense emotional reaction in people. I mean, maybe Rush Limbaugh is an artist. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If I really liked what he was doing, then maybe I would say he was an artist. If I really hated what he was doing, maybe I would say he was an artist.
What about a drug that brings about emotional responses to things?
Yeah, that's a good question. What if we're just a brain in a jar? What if there was a button you could push that made you happy?
Yeah. Is that art?
Would you do it?
No, is that art?
What if there was a button you could push to steal a video game from Walmart?
Also has art in it.
That's true. They're the most modern purveyors. You know, really, if it's not Thomas Kincaid, Painter of Light, it's not art that I'm interested in. What else we got going on here? We got laptops falling asleep. Michael Bernstein writes, in episode 31, you went on a bit about a weird accent of some character, I think, in Skyrim. You played some clips, and it didn't sound weird to me. It just sounded like a Dutch guy. In fact, it sounded a lot like Bas Rutten, a Dutch mixed martial artist who has a pretty recognizable accent when he does commentary on fights in English. So yeah, that's not a retarded guy. It's just a Dutch guy. I would like to apologize to every Dutch guy. No, I really wouldn't. I'd rather the Dutch be angry at me than the gays.
So Dutch is going to be your new pejorative?
Yeah, yeah.
WTF Dutch.
Man, that guy sounds Dutch. I still think that was really bad voice acting. let me step back from that guy sounds retarded. Because that was a mean thing to say anyway. You're not allowed to refer to things as retarded. John McGinley? Professor Grover Cleveland will get angry at you. Garfield.
Garth Brooks.
Brooks Brothers.
Brooks Shields?
Super Brooks Shields Brothers. Bill. Yeah. So the clip that I found on YouTube that I edited into the thing was a clip entitled The Worst Voiceover in Skyrim. So I'm not the only one that feels like that guy's voice acting is terrible, at least. So get this, guys. Somebody in YouTube comments agrees with me, which makes me right.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, little Dutch boy. Remember My Own Private Idaho when the dirty old man makes River Phoenix dress up like the kid on the Dutch boy
paint
floor cleaning stuff or whatever?
No.
Yeah, anyway. Let's see. What else we got in here? Bob sent us this sweet picture of some dank nugs with purple hairs and visible THC crystals on them. So thanks for that. I'm sure that got us on some sort of list with local law enforcement.
These people are looking at drug porn.
Dank nugs, guys. Dank nugs. Let's try one more. Hey, another person reminding us to talk about the name of the assignment before we start talking about the assignment.
It's on the list now.
It is, and we've been doing it.
We've been
not been doing that a lot?
It's hard for me to know, but it sounds like something we would do.
Yeah.
I've been careful about it
lately,
in the last like two or three episodes at least. So sorry about that in the past. We get to go on and we know what the assignment is, and we forget that like not everybody is listening to this once a week and remembering everything that we said.
Well, and also not everybody's playing the assignment.
Sure.
You guys are all failing this podcast.
You're not playing the assignment, it shouldn't matter what it's called. Right? So you're not really allowed to get upset. Unless, I mean, I don't like it in a podcast when people are talking about a game and I think, oh, I kind of want to check that game out, and then I don't remember what they called it. I wish there was a way
to rewind.
I really wish there was a way to rewind. I wish that there was a way to add like sort of real-time annotation to if there was some metadata on the MP3 that was like, what are we talking about right now? There's no way that I would spend the time actually keeping that up to date. What I want is a robot to do it for me. And also my laundry.
I just want a big bag of wishes.
I man the cans. You man the laptop. And Riff could be writing down what we're talking about.
Yeah, Riff can just annotate. Well, he has a little stenographer's machine. Still Skyrim. Click, click, click. Still Skyrim. Click, 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 click. Still Skyrim. Teal Hydra writes, what do you think about the problem in games like Dota and its clones, whereby having a bad player on your team is worse than having that player not be there at all, because the structure of the game is such that the enemy team gets rewarded for killing them? Do you think there's a way to keep that sort of mechanic without the game being particularly unfriendly to new players, since they might feel that their team would be better off if they weren't playing at all? I mean, that is what has stopped me from ever playing that game, is just hearing horrible stories about the way that they treat you.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are certain types of game that are going to have certain downsides to them, and that's just a thing. Like any team-based game that requires a lot of skill is going to result in a lot of dicks calling you a douche.
You know,
if you're not good at it.
When you're playing team-based
Dutch
team-based game versus the computer, which it sounds like maybe Trine 2 is going to be like when it was the Portal 2 co-op, like that. If you have a bad player with you, you're still better off than not having that person there because you literally wouldn't be able to finish.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to play the game. I don't know. I mean, I get, you know, I would say that I get frustrated when I get paired up with bad people in the WoW.
You mean Dutch people?
Dungeon Finder. But I'm not. I actually feel like, all right, well, this person has never done this dungeon before and they're not very good at this game. It's our responsibility to tell them what's going on and, like, encourage them to get better. I get frustrated with everyone else just giving up and quitting the group the first time anything goes wrong, because it's like, you're just making this worse. Like, you're taking a problem that you hate and you're making it worse by making it so exactly the same thing is going to happen to the next people that are in a group with this guy, instead of, like, having a little bit of patience and not... You know, people on the internet are assholes.
Yep.
Okay. People plus anonymity.
Yeah, you think? Or do you think just people are assholes?
I think people are less likely to be assholes in person.
I guess also you're a lot less likely to just join a pickup game of capture the flag with random strangers on the street, right? So, like, hey, you know, I mean, I have to imagine, like, if you're just wandering around and you find some strangers playing basketball against one another in a park, that they're probably going to be mean to each other. And somebody who was bad at basketball wouldn't last in that context. I mean, I don't know that I really believe that people are that much worse on the internet than they are in real life.
No, I mean, I definitely played that. I played some Ultimate Frisbee, and I was definitely one of the worst people on the team.
Yeah, but that's for hippies.
It was not hippies.
I mean, I played the lowest grade of City League softball, and there was one guy that was just constantly, like, muttering just loud enough that I could hear it about how shitty I was at fielding or whatever. And it just, you know, it just kind of, like, made me leave the experience. Sure.
That is not most of your team.
Yeah,
right?
It
like
is.
That's the difference.
No, that one, yeah, everybody else was just doing it too quiet for me to hear. They were all laughing at me in the dugout.
Okay, I think this is revealing more about you than about humanity.
They were signing petitions that said, kick Zach off this team.
Is that like but it was like a silent petition? It's like a silent auction, but...
Yeah, they all had buttons on the underside of the... I saw them. They were like these weird rubbery pink odd-shaped buttons on the underside.
On a female team?
On the underside of the... Dude, that was crude.
Keep going. On the underside of the what?
Used chewing gum on the underside of the bench in the dugout.
Yeah, that was obviously where you were going with that.
There's something wrong. See, everybody in real life is assholes.
Okay.
We met on the internet, and you were nice then. It wasn't until we started recording podcasts that you started being really mean to me. Hey, if somebody wanted to be really mean to me, how would they do that? Kevin.
Oh.
Hot Kevin. If somebody wanted to give us a hot Kevin, how would they do that?
well... you should Twitter us at VGHotDog. You should email us, VGHotDog@gmail.com. You should website us, VideoGamesHotDog.com. On that website is a link to our forums, which are pretty active. They're like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not like...
There's
like,
people talking
have
about
we,
games.
Have we fixed that thing where it's a pain in the ass
probably
to sign
not.
Up a new account?
I have not taken any action on the front.
Oh, no, I haven't either. Yeah, sorry about that. Anybody coming in who's not part of the KOL community... I'm sorry about the horse shit that's going on the forums when you have to sign up.
It's it is surprising. Like, I made a new forum account at one point and was like, what the fuck? Because, I hadn't done it in 6 years or whatever, so I had no idea what it had turned into. And it's just kind of obscure questions that, you know, it is an effort to prevent bots from playing the forums.
Yeah.
And by playing them, I mean filling them with porn. But, yeah. Anyway,
yeah, a lot of that was in response to
we had some horrible
poop vagina knocked.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
It's bad times. Also, on every show that's divisible by four,
yeah,
you should give us a positive review or a rating on iTunes.
Yeah,
if you're listening to this,
please do.
I see what you did there. And now all of the listeners are in on your little secret too.
I'm just trying to not shove it in their faces.
Sure. And that is admirable.
It would be awesome if you guys could give us reviews on iTunes.
And tell your friends, you know, if you like post about us on your blog.
Yeah.
Write about us on your Twitter. If you like a video games hot dog, and now that we've stopped being insensitive, except to the Dutch and I guess to babies, you know, you can tell your friends without being ashamed.
I still don't like monks either.
Start at episode 17 if you're gay. Just saying, probably going to work out better for you if you skip the first 16 episodes. If you're Dutch, listen to everything except episode 32.
Or maybe 31.
Oh, right. Okay. Sure. Because you might know, like, yep. if you are the guy that voice acted Ferengar's Secret Fire, please only listen to 1 through 30 and then 33 on. Also kill yourself.
But if you're the guy that voiced Hrolfgar Horse Crusher, please send me an autograph.
If you are the guy that voiced the old guy that you have to rescue from the sewers underneath Riften, you are awesome in Dune. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Have a great week, everyone.
Do you think it would count as French and random if you just rolled a D6 and then said, haw, that many times? You wouldn't really know what was going on if you rolled a one. Maybe 2+ that many. 2+ 1d6, haw.
I think you definitely want to be able to do two of them. So just 1+ 1d6.
Really?
Yeah.
Haw. Yeah, I think a haw is the base the base form of that.
Wow.
And then it evolves. It's super effective.
Gasoline.
There's a scene where somebody pulls back Santa's beard and it turns out it's the Predator.